So they had, you know, player officiate, Jim Kelly walked her down the aisle. I would love in Hamilton, next time you do this, feel free, the Waggle's giving you this, maybe Angelo Mosca officiates. And like Pigskin Pete walks you down the aisle. A little Oski Wee Wee.
Can you imagine?
I sure can.
You are now listening to The Waggle, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
It is October. It is the best time of year. Leaves are falling. Playoff football upon us. Down the stretch run. I'm Donovan Bennett. He's Dave Sanchez. And this is the Waggle Podcast. It's brought to you each and every week by our friends at Sport Clips. Known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, sports on TV like football, hockey, basketball, baseball, but really, we care about the football. Oh, and that's right. Legendary haircuts that go with the sports. All you have to do is book your appointment online, sportclips.ca, sportclips.ca, or just show up. If you don't need to pre-plan your life, we'll take walk-ins as well. Get cleaned up and get some sports. While you watch, you get a beautiful haircut and shave by the friends at Sport Clips. It is the best time of year for some. For fans, for consumers, it's great. For players, they can get kind of nervous, Davis. You've been through this because the CFL trade deadline is upon us. It is October 9th at 3:59 p.m. So some of you probably have listening to this as it has already passed. But the trade deadline for you, going through it, anxiousness, some nervousness, not that you would ever be traded, but just in the room, is there a different vibe that week?
I have been traded.
As a deadline?
I got traded in the offseason. Matt Dunnigan, my now co-worker, his 1 year, I think, maybe he was in Calgary 2 years, but as soon as he got the job at Calgary, he traded me in the offseason from Calgary to Montreal for a first-round pick and some D lineman or someone who never amounted to anything. It really just it was a bag of pucks they traded me for.
You hold it against
him? I do. I ask him all the time, and he claims that he liked my game. It was strictly a money decision, that his hands were tied by the ownership to get rid of some of the big salaries. So that's his excuse all the time. But that's what he claims. But I have been traded. I look at the only thing, CFL, the trade market in the CFL is probably like no other. It just, there is no market for trade. This may be the one season where I actually think that some trades could pop off, because there's teams that are way out of contention.
Yes.
And there's teams that are in contention who really need a quarterback or need depth or need players. So this is a unique situation in the trade market.
Especially around the most important position in the game, in the quarterback, because we've had some terrible quarterback play, one. But also we've had so many quarterbacks go down. 43 games lost to injury by 9 QBs this year. Zach Kolaros has missed the most with 11. He didn't make it through a series. There's only one starter from week one who hasn't missed a game due to injury, and that's Mike Riley. And he won't be traded, even though that team is, for the most part, out of contention. Riley's made 49 consecutive starts. Matt Nichols, we learned, is out for the season with a shoulder injury, which he suffered in week 10. 6 weeks of rehab, so he looks like he's done for the year. Had surgery Thursday to repair his shoulder. He's also a free agent this offseason, which adds some intrigue in terms of, well, if you don't think he's going to be back there, do the Bombers make a move? This is the second highest offense in terms of points are the Bombers, but they also have Sean McGuire as their backup, who hasn't thrown a pass in the regular season. Do you see a trade happening at the quarterback position? And if so, is it Winnipeg?
Yes.
Yes and yes?
Yes. The trade is happening. The trade is happening, and it's going to be Winnipeg, and it's going to be with the Toronto Argonauts.
Ooh. For Dakota Prukop.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be – no. It has to be Zach Kolaros. It has to be. It makes such sense. I don't know how.
Why not James Franklin or Thompson? I'm just saying, like, why Kolaros?
It could be Bethel Thompson. But Bethel Thompson has a smaller contract than Zach. He has the potential to come back next year and be a guy for them. Zach, there's zero chance that Zach comes back, because you can't risk. If you're a team, I would never, ever, ever bring Zach back on a at the beginning of a season. I said that when Sask re-signed him. You're going to sign Zach Collaros and pay him money when there's a good chance every time he gets hit, there's a good chance that he's done for a long amount of time. You can't risk that. Now, you can do that with four games left in the season. You can do that. So, and when he's good, he's still in the upper half. I wouldn't say he's still one of the best. I would have said that a couple years ago, even though he was coming off injuries. He's still in the upper half of the league, though, and when he's healthy. So if you can get a guy like that, and you can get him, because Toronto's not going to use him. Toronto, he has a major playtime bonus in his contract. So Toronto's not going to play him. Why pay him another whatever he gets per game? Because he has a playtime bonus in his contract. Why would you pay him? You're not going to make the playoffs, and you're going to pay a guy who's not going to be there next year. He's not playing for Toronto. So Toronto could trade him for a fifth-round pick, and it would be worth it. Get him off your roster. Give him to someone else. He's going to get traded to somebody. Winnipeg makes sense if Mike O'Shea they're not stubborn or stuck on staying status quo.
As a GM, you're trying to project what your roster is going to look like in the future and what other rosters are going to look like, what's going to be available and for how much. The two quarterback rooms that I'm fascinated by, because I think they're going to set what happens throughout the rest of the league, is Hamilton and Winnipeg. Dane Evans is balling out of control right now, and he currently is making a fraction of what Jeremiah Masoli is making. Jeremiah Masoli is a free agent, and he's coming off of a torn ACL.
So no big deal for a quarterback, which you know.
No question. Yeah. But I assume that they're not bringing both of those guys back next year. They could, but if you have savings at the quarterback position and Dane Evans is playing like a starter.
Dane will be back. There's no way. Yeah, there's no way they both come back. The only way they would come back, and Jeremiah's agent would never do it, and either would Jeremiah, is if Jeremiah was on a smaller contract in regards to playtime. So he gets his money and then he makes his 500 or whatever it is with playtime. Just the risk in case he happened to get hurt. And Dane had to play, you wouldn't be stuck having two guys that cost. It doesn't matter. Jeremiah, I don't think, will be back there because they can, to your point, they can afford to play Dane at that fraction of a price. So why wouldn't
And Jeremiah wouldn't they? Will have more lucrative offers.
Oh, huge offers.
Ontario, in Toronto, or Ottawa, potentially in Winnipeg. And that's why Winnipeg is fascinating.
Potentially in BC.
You think?
Potentially. Why not?
Because the guy that they put on the side of the building, they just signed.
The guy that's put on the side of the building, they pay $800,000 to. If you can get somebody for $500,000 who you think could do just as good of a job, it's a question. It's a conversation. And Mike Riley's contract probably goes up a fair amount, or it's still a big, big, big number. You could get two Jeremiah Masolis for the price of a Mike Riley, and I don't think Mike's playing twice as good as Jeremiah was. Actually, I know he's not.
Wow. I mean,
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's a possibility. Jeremiah's it looks like he lost money by getting injured going into free agency, but he's going to be so highly sought after.
Yes, timing, man.
And now, too, a knee injury with today's science and a quarterback, it's not even really an issue. He's 100% fine.
And so the other one that will set all of this is Winnipeg, because they have a decision technically to make, or non-decision. Now, who's going to be their quarterback for the rest of the year? Will they make an acquisition in terms of trade? And or who is going to be their quarterback moving forward after this year? Because Matt Nichols, not only is he hurt, he's also a free agent. We're going to talk about Hamilton's situation with Rob Hitchcock, who's being honored by the Ticats this week. We are going to talk about the Winnipeg situation. Jeff Hamilton wrote a piece talking about their current offensive struggles and their lack of a strong decision in terms of looking at other quarterbacks for now anyways in Winnipeg. But right now, if we dial down to Winnipeg's decision, because I think there are cascading effects, is Chris Streveler the same or much worse of an option than Matt Nichols. Matt Nichols was 7-2, and Chris Drevler is only 2-2 in terms of record. Matt Nichols is averaging 215 yards passing per. Strevler just 154. But to me, Strevler gives you 78 yards in the run game, and Nichols gave you 4. I'm not sure if they're that worse off in Winnipeg with Strevler. I don't know if he can be your guy moving forward, but is it time for them to make a decision if he can be a starting quarterback, not just for the rest of this year, but for years to come for them?
Matt or Chris?
Either or. Because that's basically a decision they have to make at the deadline, no?
No. Well, no. They're not going to make a decision.
Because no
one else. They have to make a decision if that Chris Trevler or Matt Nichols is the quarterback of the future at the deadline?
I guess not. Because if as long as whoever comes in is not coming in to take Strevler's job.
For next year?
Yes.
There's none of those guys that are coming in my opinion, are guys that are guarantees to be there for next year. Anyone that would come in, or the guys I view coming in, are all rental guys.
Even Franklin?
Franklin hasn't proven anything.
Sure.
I wouldn't even bring Franklin in.
Really?
I wouldn't. I don't even think Franklin's much better than Strevler right now.
Really?
I don't.
So I was going to say you think Franklin, with the offensive talent that Winnipeg has, but it's not like Toronto doesn't have receivers.
I mean, look, if you force me to take James Franklin or Chris Trevler right now to be my starting quarterback, I would hesitantly probably take James Franklin just because I know he throws a better ball and I want Chris Trevler as my leader and my quarterback.
Right.
I don't trust James Franklin.
See, the interesting thing about Strevler is I love what he does for you in the run game.
No doubt.
It's like you're playing with two elite tailbacks at all times. The problem is you're playing as 9 in the box. Like, not even 8. 9. Everyone is looking at the backfield all the time because he's dropping back and passing 20 times max. And so what that does to you as a play caller, and what that does to you if you're Andrew Harris, if you're looking up through your visor and you're seeing everyone's staring at you in the backfield, it's just, it's difficult. And so that's why I'm really torn and fascinated to see what Winnipeg does moving forward. I'm actually fascinated to hear what Jeff Hamilton has to say, because he's been watching that offense up close and personal, and he has been less than impressed. Those conversations coming up on The Waggle. Before we talk about Blue Bombers, let's talk tea. You know what goes great with twisting up the volume on your favorite tune? Twisting up the party with a Twisted Tea. Made with real tea and a touch of lemon, Twisted Tea is the hard iced tea that goes down easy. So whether it's game day, beach day, or just the end of a work day, the good times start with a Twisted Tea. Twisted Tea, good times with a twist. We will make you wait no longer. He is Jeff Hamilton, not just a writer, a multimedia producer for the Winnipeg Free Press. And the story is, stuck in quicksand, Bombers must snap dismal losing streak to stay in contention for division title. He wrote it. He's here to talk to you about it. And Jeff, my first question is, what's more concerning for Bomber Nation, the defense or the offense right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't want to say that's the million-dollar question, but, you know, it's of all the situations the Bombers have had this year, I mean, they've usually been good. But over the last month, I mean, it's everything's kind of come crashing down. And that's really the biggest issue is trying to identify what exactly is the, you know, is what's dragging them down the most. I mean, you know, I want to say the defense, because when you look at 800 plus passing yards over the last two games they've given up, how do you not say the defense? But the defense has really been the reason why this team is still 9-5 through the year. So and that's because the offense, I mean, despite being, we look at the numbers, I mean, top team, like, I think they're second in points, most offensive touchdowns, yet you watch everything and it just everything looks so difficult. So it's kind of pick your poison right now. And even if you want to throw in special teams, something that's been a staple of head coach Mike O'Shea's for his entire career, particularly something he, you know, takes pride in as a head coach, that's also kind of been on the downward spiral. So everything just seems to be coming up negative for these guys after a pretty strong start.
I'm going to read something in the article that got my attention. Jeff is the discussion about the quarterback situation. I'm going to read you a blurb from your article. In your own words, count me in the group that finds it absolutely ludicrous that one day after the news broke that quarterback Matt Nichols undergoing surgery on his throwing shoulder and was ruled out for the rest of the season, O'Shea went on radio before the game and declared the Bombers wouldn't go out and get another experienced pivot. Seriously, not even entertaining the option. Jeff, those were your words. That surprised the heck out of me. I did not hear that. Your thoughts about the Bomber quarterback situation and Mike O'Shea definitively saying he's not looking at another quarterback.
Absolutely bananas. I use ludicrous in that in the story because you can't really say bananas in print. But that's, I mean, I'm kind of speechless. And I just, after everything this organization has been through, obviously the 28-year, you know, Grey Cup drought, which isn't all on this current regime, guys, but, you know, if you look over that span, nobody has had a management group, a coaching staff, nobody has had a longer tenure. I think it's 6-7 years now than the current one. So as much as they don't own all of it, they own the biggest chunk of it. And just with that as the kind of the background, everyone knows this is the year. The Bombers know it. The fans know it. The media, in a lot of ways, you know, wrote about it. This is the year after
I picked them to win the Grey Cup. Better.
Well, yeah, I mean this, and they've kind of been in that conversation for a few years now. But this is the year where everyone kind of came in and said, you know, Calgary isn't going to be as strong. I know that's been a constant narrative over the last few years, but it's just been like Winnipeg. Everyone dipped into free agency, and you know, as we debated the winners and losers, Winnipeg was on the winner's side because they really didn't have to do anything. Obviously, adding guys like Willie Jefferson and a couple other pieces was important, but they had that nucleus. They had that leadership group. They had the veterans they want. Every single area of their roster looked to be in good shape, even at the quarterback situation, which I think, you know, with the benefit of hindsight now is a little bit of a different picture with all the backups and what they've been able to do this season. But even at that position with Chris Streveler was, you know, as your number two was a good situation. Now that you've kind of hit this, you know, nightmare situation, which again, every other team besides the BC Lions have dealt with, you know, you're now saying that you're going to put your entire season. This is what Mike O'Shea and General Manager Kyle Walters are saying by making that statement, is that they're going to rest their season and possibly their jobs on a guy who has 9 career starts. And in those 9 career starts haven't even all been this year, but what we've seen from those 9 career starts from Chris Streveler has not been, you know, hasn't been absolutely horrendous by any means, but it certainly hasn't been enough to suggest that this is the guy that's going to lead them to the cup. And for that very reason, the fact that you're not even entertaining the idea of bringing in a more experienced pivot, whether that be Kevin Glenn, you know, whether that you go towards Toronto and hopefully you can make something before the trade deadline coming up here, you know, just the idea of not even suggesting that you're even open to all options. Like that's like number one,
okay,
you know, PR speak, is that you don't rule anything out. So the fact that they haven't, you know, that they've kind of definitively gone with Chris Streveler, that leaves you one hit away from starting Sean McGuire. And now,
okay, so Jeff, he said that before. He said that before the game, before last week's game. Do you believe that Mike O'Shea will stick to his guns and there's no room for wiggle here? Because that was before the game. We saw what happened on the weekend. Now what?
I don't think he changed. I don't think even though Friday's game, obviously a dismal performance from all phases and including the offense, Chris Streveler still threw for over 300 yards. It was the first time a Winnipeg quarterback had thrown for over 300 yards. Obviously, a lot of that stuff came in garbage time, over half.
150 in the fourth quarter, yeah.
But if you know anything about Mike O'Shea, I mean, the credit that Mike O'Shea deserves is his ability to rally his players. I mean, there is, you know, I mean, I know a lot of players love their coach, but there just seems this whole culture shift in Winnipeg. It was really bad before he showed up. And he's created this culture where guys will literally run through a wall for him. They want to play for Mike O'Shea. And the part of that reason is because of how loyal Mike O'Shea is to his players. You know, he doesn't call anybody a starter. He's all about, you know, everyone's kind of on equal footing despite major discrepancies in playing time and opportunity. But he just has that blind loyalty. And for that reason, you know, I don't think he views the greater picture, the larger picture of all things. I think he's got the tunnel vision on. You know, we often hear from teams saying 1 week at a time, one game at a time. And I just think that that's like he believes that wholeheartedly to the point where he doesn't look at what might be an obvious smart football decision, like picking up another player. And I'm not trying to say that I have, you know, make better decisions than Mike O'Shea as a coach. I'm not saying that at all. But the idea of not even entertaining it, I mean, the only conclusion I can come up with would be it would hurt Chris Streveler's feelings. Because, I mean, Chez, you've been in rooms before. Those guys want to win. I mean, as much respect as they have for Chris Streveler, they are also well aware that he is one hit away from starting a quarterback who has never started a game, let alone thrown a pass in this league. So just the message it sends to maybe one guy or perhaps an offense, which I don't even agree with that statement. You know, I think you're sending a greater message to the rest of the locker room that, you know, you're not doing your work to make this team or to ensure this team come the third week of November that not only you're there, but you're in a position to win.
Two-part question. Take a breath. One, is this team worse off with Chris Streveler than they were with Matt Nichols? Like you mentioned, they finally had a 300-yard passer, and at least Streveler is giving you something in the run game. And two, is there a better option out there via trade with the trade deadline coming up in a couple days? Like of things that you could realistically
Or somebody
acquire.
Who's retired, maybe? Is there someone that's better than Chris Streveler, I guess?
Well, the two-part question, I mean, is this team better off with Chris Streveler behind center? Yeah. It's kind of a yes and no situation. I think we've seen at times, and this is the body of work. It's the big difference. I'm going to say no. But the big difference is not because we haven't seen flashes of Chris Streveler. I think, you know, he was a first star of one of the weeks or a couple weeks ago after a strong performance against Saskatchewan at home. And you know, we've seen flashes of exciting play, a play that Matt Nichols could never do. And by that, I mean, you know, obviously the versatility in the run game. I mean, Chris Streveler just completely opens up that playbook in the sense that he can, you know, he can literally run for out of trouble, whereas Matt Nichols would either throw it away or take a hit. The reason why I say no to that is because what Matt Nichols, you know, the game manager tag that we've kind of plastered to him since he's been here is kind of what Chris Streveler isn't, and by that it's decision making. You know, Matt Nichols isn't necessarily going to win you the game, but he's not going to lose you the game either. Whereas Chris Streveler, it seems like, you know, you're throwing something up into the air and you're hoping it lands on a positive game, but more often than not, you have no idea. So him, like, I mean, you look at last week's game, you know, in the CFL, 14 points, 20 points, as we saw 2 weeks ago in Montreal against the Bombers, isn't impossible. Yet when you need a comeback, when you need someone to make a big play, Chris Streveler comes up with two interceptions. Not too, you know, he's not driving the field and getting you points. So, you know, to me, I just, with Matt Nichols, you obviously have that veteran presence, you have that, you know, that experience, and most importantly, you have better decision making. And, you know, if the defense can contribute and you can kind of stay on the field or sustain any kind of drives and give the defense some, you know, some breathing room on the sidelines at points, I think you get that complete effort. With Chris Streveler, it's either going really, really well or going really, really bad. And I just think if you're a professional sports team, that's not a way to gamble your season.
So in life, leverage is not something you have. It's something that you create. Is there a chance that Michael Shea said that as to not seem like they're desperate for a fix at the quarterback position? So maybe the pick capital you give up or the neg rights that you give up for a player that might be moved is less. Could you foresee that being the scenario with which Michael Shea said that?
Yeah, I guess I didn't really answer the second part of that question, eh? So yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible, and there's reason to believe, because if you fast forward or if you rewind back to when Matt Nichols first got hurt, they were looking for that backup. You know, that was almost kind of the immediate reaction. They reached out to Kevin Glenn. They had reached out to Drew Willey. Both of those contracts didn't work out for various reasons. For Kevin Glenn, I believe it wasn't so much of a, you know, I think it is a lack of interest to come back to the game, truly, for him. And particularly, the Bombers aren't looking for a guy to start. They're not looking for a guy to come in and play right away. So I don't know if that would be appealing to Kevin Glenn to leave his family and his life to kind of hold a clipboard as as a mentor for another season after already gone kind of in, probably enjoying retirement here. Drew Willey, I just don't know if the money added up. You know, I think Drew Willey is his. I think that would be a special beast for this town because, as we know, Drew Willey played for this team and you know, after a fairly sizzling start with the organization, just absolutely fluttered out and couldn't complete a pass for the life of him, and eventually, you know, is not in the CFL a couple of years later. So there has been an effort to be made. You know, obviously, if you're going to discuss what your options are publicly, whether it be, you know, whatever media outlet, you're probably not going to talk about your interest in a McLeod Bethel Thompson who at one point was with the Bombers and they traded them to Toronto. You're probably not going to talk about whatever interest you might have in James Franklin or whoever, but then there's Toronto. I don't know what Toronto's interest may be and what the cost might be. I don't think the Bombers are looking to, although I would argue should be looking to, not give away the farm by any means for those two guys, but at least to give an offer that, you know, at least what you're getting back is some kind of insurance that if the guy that you truly believe in can win you the cup goes down, it's not an all lost season. Because that's, I mean, let's call it what it is, guys. With Sean McGuire, it's a lost season. No offense to him. He could grow to be a great player one day, but not at this point, not with this much experience, not with how big a stake this season is. So, yeah, there's definitely the potential for some gamesmanship there. But even then, with the two things that, as I've kind of already mentioned, the two things that make me think that it's not, you know, not gamesmanship is that O'Shea has a reputation of being loyal to his players. And that would go as far as to not picking a guy up. And, you know, on top of that, I just don't know what the options are. I just don't know what could be out there or what's available. But to say things like, you know, to say that you're sticking with this guy, I mean, it's great to put your confidence behind him, but to not even leave an open window to suggest that something might be happening in the future, even for the fans, I just think it's ridiculous.
Okay, answer me this, Jeff, and I want a yes or no. I want a yes or no answer on two people. Would in a four games or for the rest of the season, would Zach Collaros, if you could trade for him, would he be a better option to get the Bombers closer to winning a Grey Cup than Chris Traveller right now?
No, I'm not. I don't think so. You know, I mean, maybe like at this exact moment.
Yes.
No, I don't think so. I think so.
I will strongly disagree with you on that one. Next one would
well, I mean, he has to be cleared to play first.
I'm asking if he's healthy.
Let me come back and say at least what. Why? I mean, come on. I mean, okay. Zach Collaros hasn't played great football in years. So to suggest he would just all of a sudden come back and be a great football player, I don't know.
I would not. He would not be my quarterback if this was week one. Because I said it when he signed with the Riders that there's no way he's going to make it through a year, and I still agree with that. But if you're going to give me 5 weeks and say or have him for 3 weeks in a playoff run, Zach Collaros gives me a better chance to win a Grey Cup right now than Chris Traveller. And I'll ask you the other question, same thing. Because you know that Kevin Glenn knows the offense, would Kevin Glenn give you a better opportunity to win a Grey Cup right now than Chris Traveller if he agreed to come back?
Honestly, I don't think that my answer even matters because neither of those guys we brought in to start. So, you know, as much as I think that Kevin Glenn's experience and knowing the offense, and I mean, also you got to make sure that you put the caveat of getting the 5 or 6 weeks to learn the offense. If you're talking about bringing these guys in, I'm not talking about them not being caliber, you know, a good right. football players. I mean, at this moment right now, like if he was to come in this weekend, get a week of practice, would he give the Bombers a better chance to win this week? No. But I mean, that's probably not what you're asking. Obviously, it's whether or not they can win a title. I definitely think those two guys would be just as good, if not better, with the opportunity to learn the playbook, to get
in 5 weeks from now.
The offense. Absolutely. I mean, that's just because those guys have done it before. That's nothing against Chris Traveller. And I'm not saying that it's a much better opportunity. And I mean, who knows? I mean,
So then, are you not giving your? So then, are Kyle Walters and Michael Shea not giving the Winnipeg Blue Bombers fans and team the best chance to win a Grey Cup in what you call the year to win the Grey Cup by not exhausting all options to get to try to get these guys in?
Well, yeah. Why do you think I said it was ludicrous? It's the only reason why it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous because you're not giving your team the best opportunity. You're not making decisions that puts your football team in a better position. Now, this is all hinges on, obviously, the health of Chris Streveler. If Chris Streveler, it's more of a gamble than it is of anything, right? I mean, if Chris Streveler is your guy, I'm not going to disagree with that. As I mentioned, I don't think what we've seen so far through his five starts here this season and nine overall, I don't think we've seen enough to suggest he's capable of beating the best teams in the league. But I'm not saying he's not capable quarterback. Foolish part or the part that, I describe as ludicrous is willing to take that gamble with what you have behind them. Because whether or not they're able to trade for Bethel Thompson, whether they're able to trade for James Rang, whether they're able to sign Kevin Glenn, whether they're able to sign that or acquire Zach Caleros, it doesn't matter because none of those guys in that group are going to start for this team.
Is Mike O'Shea's loyalties or his loyalties, DJ, is this something that's hurting him right now? Would you say that?
I mean, I thought he was too loyal to Matt Nichols last year when Matt Nichols had a month of some of the worst quarterback play I've ever seen. But this is his MO, and I think it comes from him being a player. But actually, we'll see, because if Streveler balls out for the next month, then he'll look like a genius. But I'm actually interested in something that you said, Jeff, saying that O'Shea and Walters are doing it and, in fact, putting their jobs on the line doing it. I was surprised to hear you say that because life is about expectations. And if you were to say coming into the year that, in the first week of October, they're going to have 18 points tied for the most in the West Division, 6-1 at home, 6-1 in the division, with a suspension and an injury at the quarterback suspension in the backfield, injury in the backfield. I think most people would say, well, yeah, we'll take that. But when you now look at it through the lens of lost three of the last four, 4-5 in the last nine, there's a added sense of panic. Do you think literally that they're both coaching and execing, in the case of Walters, for their jobs over the next couple months?
If they're not, they should be. I mean, it's not that they should have this desperation to them, and I know they don't. That's not how they operate, and that isn't how you should operate. So it's not about it's not about self-preservation for these two guys. I don't think that they're honestly worried about it, and particularly Mike O'Shea and Kyle Wald both have done enough good in this league to warrant a opportunity somewhere else, whether they're a package deal or whatever. So I don't know if that security is necessarily an issue. I mean, if you obviously want to go to just with the Bombers, I think there's a, when they came in for, at the end of 2013, and it was a Wade Miller, Kyle Walters, Mike O'Shea, the Canadian mafia, if you will. And they've done a lot of great things after some tough seasons. But I mean, I hate to bring up this line, but the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. And at the end of the day, as much as Kyle Walters and Mike O'Shea have done some great things, there's also some things that, particularly with Mike O'Shea, some of his decision making at key moments in games at key times has been kind of the team's undoing. And it's as much as you want to lean on this stability, if you will, because everyone always talks about the Joe Mack era and how bad it was back then. Well, Joe Mack seems to be doing pretty good right now, even though he's got a worse record than the Bombers. So that's just a bit of a side note. But everyone always talks about how like that era was so bad and how this is, we finally have
bring
some stability
back
and
Joe
Winnipeg and whatever.
Bring back
right,
yeah, Joe.
No,
bring
absolutely
back
not
Joe.
Advocating for that. But what I'm saying is I think there's a reluctance for a guy like Wade Miller, because of the relationship he has with these guys, to necessarily put them on the hot seat. But I also think that, this is what it is. I mean, this is a 28-year drought that the city's had. And we're not talking about it. We're talking about a team who's been very successful in the regular season over the last 3 years. and will be again this year. But they have had little to no success in the playoffs when it matters. They haven't even had a shot at the Grey Cup, you know, and some of the performance in the playoffs just hasn't been right. And whether that's coaching decisions in game, whether that's personnel decisions, throughout the season and whatever, it's just, to me, this culture that Mike O'Shea, you know, although very, you know, very positive in a lot of different ways, is stubborn, is blind loyalty. And even as a, you know, just as a comment before you asked this question about, you know, like giving, you know, all that loyalty to Matt Nichols. I mean, the loyalty has been, you know, the blind loyalty has been kind of a theme for Mike since he got here. I mean, Drew Willey had barely any CFL experience and the season hadn't even started. And he claimed Drew Willey, the starting quarterback, without even a tryout in training camp, I just think some of these decisions are eventually some of these attitudes and moods eventually get old and you need to move on from them. Now, I'm not suggesting that's the case per se in Winnipeg, but you know, if you go into this year, for instance, if Chris Streveler gets hurt next week and the Bombers finish 9-9 and are eliminated from the first round of the playoffs, this fan base is not going to be happy. They're going to want major change. And whether or not, you know, Wade Miller wants to do that or whatever. And again, I'm not saying that the fans are going to dictate what happens, but eventually you're going to have to make a move. But as I always say, you know, you shouldn't sell your old car until you have a new one. So you also need to do your homework and look to see what other options are. But again, this is the year. This is a big season and everyone knows it. Those contracts are up. So whether or not you want to move on from them or not, you're going to have to decide not only whether you want to move on from them, you're going to have to decide whether you want to move forward with them.
Well, one thing we know is that people will not give Matt Nichols and his injury as an excuse if things don't go well. Calgary dealt with injury at the quarterback position. Edmonton's dealing with it now. Saskatchewan has dealt with it better than anyone. Montreal has, Hamilton has. So we're going to find out over the next few weeks because the schedule gets real difficult, especially when you look at the defenses they're going to have to play. They go to Saskatchewan on Saturday. Then they host Montreal. Then guess how you end the year with a home and home with the Calgary Stampeders, likely for the division. This is going to be real, real interesting. Looking forward to seeing you cover it and comment on it throughout. Thanks so much for this, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. It's a pleasure.
Before we talk to Rob Hitchcock, let's talk about tires and tickets, a winning combo. Until October 26th, score a free pair of CFL regular season tickets when you buy a set of four BF Goodrich tires at Cal Tire. Tickets are valid for any city and can be used in either the 2019 or 2020 CFL seasons. Check out caltire.com/CFL tickets. That's caltire.com/CFL tickets for all the details. Cal Tire, proud to be the official tire retailer of the CFL in partnership with BF Goodrich, the official tire of the CFL. And you have to wait no longer. Now joining us on the podcast, CFL All-Star twice, East Division All-Star three times, and part of the 99 Grey Cup winning team for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Finally, we have a good defensive back on the Waggle podcast. Rob Hitchcock, thank you for joining us, and congrats on going into the Wall of Honor at Tim Hortons Field.
Hey, guys, I appreciate it. It's already starting to be a fun week, that's for sure.
Well, my question is, what took so long? You won a cup like 20 years ago. What took so long to get your name up there? And now you get to celebrate with a bunch of guys that you won with as you're being honored. That must be a big deal for you.
Yeah, you know, about taking so long, it's that doesn't matter. It's just being a Hamilton kid growing up in that stadium and seeing the, you know, I'm the 24th guy going up out of, 150 years of history. So there's a lot of guys that deserve to be up there before me. And I've just, you know, fortunate and blessed to be able to see my name going up there on the weekend and to celebrate it with my teammates, especially the 99 group that we won that with 20 years ago. It's just, yeah, it's hard to describe because the amount of guys that are coming down from the States and Canada here, we have 36 guys, I think, right now that are making the trip down to celebrate with me and the 20th reunion. So far overdue, that's for sure.
You mentioned that stadium because the site is the same, but the stadium much different from when you played. Ivor Wynne is now Tim Hortons Field. When you're talking to the fellas or around them this weekend, do you ever look around and think, man, imagine if we had this back in our day?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity a couple times in the last 2 years or so to talk to some of the players. Mike Morielli and I do a little event down there with some ladies called Huddles and Heels, and it's called Black and Gold. Now we do it twice. We just teach ladies, the game of football, Cole's Notes version of them, and we get like 60 to 100 ladies all the time that come twice a year. And we ended up talking to some of the players about this, and you know, just telling them what we had. And I wouldn't have changed a thing at Old Ivor Wynne because that was our house, that was our home. 55 guys in a room. Whether we had all the amenities or not, we had what we had and we played with what we had. And it was just one of those things that I didn't care really about that. Mind you, if we had the stuff now, wow. I mean, yeah, it's sure nice to go into work to go into a hot shower when water wasn't turned off at the Old Ivor Wynne. So one of those things are just some neat things to have. But just for us being able to play in that stadium and to call it our own was just, very special.
You were always known as a hard hitter, and that was your trademark and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You come across the middle, you watch out for 42. The game now and the trend, your style obviously you'd be in big trouble. What do you think about the trend of how football, where football is going in regards to hitting and how your style would translate?
Yeah, I mean, the game has definitely changed. I hear the word science. The game is a science now with all the equipment and the different helmets. And, it has changed in a way where, they are protecting the players. And we don't, as defensive guys and even the offensive guys, we're not out there to hurt people. Like, that's not what we're out there to do. But when we're on that field, you kind of just flip that switch and you want to go and play hard. And that's the only way that I knew how to play. Having said that, into this modern game now, again, there's probably a lot of headshots, but they weren't geared and targeted headshots. Those are just running as fast as you can to the ball and, making a hit on a Pringle or a Steagle or something. It was just one of those things where we just played so fast and so hard, and the guys are playing fast and hard as well today, but you do have to make better decisions, maybe make faster decisions. I don't know how that's possible, but the game happens so quickly. It would be difficult probably for my style of play now. I would have to kind of tone it down a little bit, which would be really difficult, but I like the way that they are protecting the players. In some cases, it is taking away from the game, but it's also, from the grassroots. You're not seeing a lot of the young players starting to play anymore because of the parents are worried about the concussions and whatnot. And that's totally, that's for safety is first for the guys that are and the girls that are starting to play right now. But it is one of those things that it does have to change or, there's going to be, down the road, I'm feeling the effects now. I'm going to be 49 this month. So, it's one of those things. It's hard to say.
That group in 99 was a special group of guys. You played a long time, and I'm sure that because of the Grey Cup, but also just that locker room led by Danny McManus. What made that group special? And any stories from after the Grey Cup that PG that you would share with us?
Well, I tell you, when we were 2-16 in 97. And Ronnie Lancaster and Danny Mac and Flutie came in. Those three guys came in, and Ron Lancaster, I'll never forget. The first meetings we had when we brought a couple of the senior guys in, and I think there was four or five of us, and he just said to us that you guys are going to police the locker room. We are not coaching staff will not be in that locker room. You guys will police it. And it's just one of those things where he just allowed the players to play. The coaches put us in positions to play the game, but we were together as a group. Not mentioning that the other teams aren't playing as a group, but it was just one of those things that we knew when we were playing that we are be able to go out and rely on each other, because we were, you know, we played together for a couple of years, some of these guys, and to rely on each other and to communicate, and just to believe in one another. And that's what we did. We believed in the system. We bought in right away to Ron's system. And that's why we were successful for those couple of years.
I don't know if we'll ever, and if so, it'll take a long time, see another Canadian defensive back accumulate numbers the way you did. Special teams tackles, 122. Defensive tackles, 404. Combined, 606. All franchise records. 36 picks. 11 sacks. We needed to have some more safety blitzes. We need to get those sacks up. But more importantly, 200 games played. That, to me, is the number that jumps out when I look at your career. The fact that you were able to play at a high level for so long. What was that like towards the back end of your career, being able to continue to be available for your team and in the lineup?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to play, 12 years in Hamilton, and to stay fairly well injury free. And, you know, I didn't miss a game, I think, until my ninth year. I broke my radius in preseason against the Argos. And it's a funny story, because Ronnie Lancaster said, "You're not going in this game." It was a preseason game. And I said, "Well, coach, I just need to get timing. We play them next week. We open up against them. Just want to get some timing." And he says, "Fine, you're going in for two series." And of course, the first series, toss out to one of the running backs. I come flying in to make a hit. He makes a move on me, and I throw my left arm out, and I hit his knee and snap my radius. So I missed nine games, and he was not a happy camper. But it was just one of those things where I just played, again, I played the game hard, fast, and just I stayed injury-free. We're always, there's injured and you're hurt, right? So you can play. You can play hurt. If you're injured, it's difficult to play that way. But I was very fortunate to do that and to play with some great teammates. The longevity in my career, goes to our training staff as well. Our trainers were unbelievable. Our doctors were great. They got us ready for every single game, not just myself, but a lot of other guys that played a lot of games as well. You know, I just want to take the credit myself. But there's a lot of people that had to do with that. And in my when I was 37 years old, when I retired, it was one of those things where I think I was in one of the best shapes of my life when I was 37. I just came off a great year. Didn't play all that much on defense in my 12th year, but I was playing special teams. I think I led the league in special teams tackles the year before, and fully ready to go and play again. And, it just didn't happen. There were some younger guys in the ranks, but I was I really wanted to play another year or two. And it's just one of those things that, players don't get to go out sometimes the way they want to. And that's just the nature of things. And, you move forward. And here I am today, going up on the wall this week, and just couldn't be any happier.
12 seasons with one team. Most people's marriages don't last that long. Never mind being one team in the CFL. What's that like for you to be synonymous with that franchise, but also, unlike most players, never have another experience of playing for another franchise and having different colors on?
Well, I can tell you, in 2000, after we won the Grey Cup, it was Calgary. Wally Bona was making some calls, and just one of those things. I'm born and raised in Hamilton, and for a little bit more money I might have made back then, it just wasn't worth going out to another team out west. And I just said, I'm a loyal guy. Once I'm on a team, I want to stick with that team for as long as I can. I'm not sure if you knew, but I did come out of retirement in 2007, and I did go play for the Eskimos for three games. That's kind of one thing that when I was released by Hamilton, Mike Morielli and I, when we were released, I thought we were done. I thought I wasn't done. I wanted to go to another team and finish off my career and kind of go out the way I wanted to go out. And that didn't happen until week 14, when they called me and asked if I'd come. So I called the organization. I called Hamilton. I talked to Scott Mitchell and just said, "Hey, listen, guys, this is what's happening. I want to go out, and I want to play a couple more games to kind of finish off a career that the way I want to go out." And I gave them a phone call first before I said yes to Edmonton. And then I went down and I played. And, the best thing for me, the way I went out, was the last game of the season was against the Hamilton Ticats in Hamilton. And Danny Machocha, who was an all-star Hall of Fame linebacker for Edmonton, Dan Kepley, who was an all-around, just a phenomenal coach and player. and he had worn the number 42 as well. And he took that off the shelf that was retired for like 26 years and gave me that number and said, you know, you have every right to wear this as well. So he pulled it off the shelf, gave it to me, I wore it for three games. And in Hamilton, I had a standing ovation from the Ticat fans, which was just, you know, for me, it brought tears to my eyes, just kind of going out the way I wanted to. I knew I was done. When I played that last game in Hamilton with an Edmonton Esco uniform on, I knew I was finished. I played the game and we lost. Edmonton lost and Hamilton won, which was good. But it was one of those things where, you know, I kind of went out the way I wanted to go out.
This Hamilton team right now isn't losing much either. It's probably the best team they've had since 99. Do you think they've got the makeup to finally bring the cup back to the Hammer?
I do. Not just saying that because they're 11-3. I've been to a lot of the games this year, and you know, I've talked to Coach Steinhauer, and he's a buddy of mine, and just the Mark Washington and those guys. They've got it.
Do you have to call him? Does he make you call him Coach Steinhauer now?
No, not at all. We call him worse than that. I call him Mo. It's just one of those things. But I see the makeup. I see the belief. I see their faces when I'm in when I'm, you know, walking through the stadium, when I get an opportunity to kind of go behind the scenes and see those guys, and I see them getting ready and the preparation that they have. They do remind me of those 98, 99 teams that we were on, even the 2000 teams, that they believe in a system. The coaches are letting the players play the game and the way they want to. They just put them in positions to make plays. And I tell you, it goes a long way when you've got player coaches that have been there and done that. It just brings a lot of experience, and they're believing and they're on a roll right now. So I'm looking forward to see those guys go to the cup.
It also goes a long way when you have a GM who's been there and done that, and a buddy of yours, former teammate Kyle Walters, doing a good job in Winnipeg. There's a good chance that it could be Winnipeg Hamilton in the Grey Cup, which may have some split allegiances for you as a teammate and a former team. What's your praise of the job he's done?
Oh, Kyle's great. I just actually saw he invited me down to Toronto a month ago or so to watch Winnipeg and Toronto. And I sat up in his box, haven't seen him forever, but we keep in contact with each other because, as you know, he was my backup for 8 years in Hamilton. And we were roommates on the road, and he's one of my closest buddies. And I tell you, he's done a great job bringing Mike O'Shea in, who's just, you know, not only ambassador of the game, just a true football guy. And that guy's, you know, one of my friends, good friends as well. And to see those guys, you know, compete every single week and to bounce back after some tough losses that they've had. You know, coaches like that are played in the league that are still, you know, in their late 40s, early 40s, that are guys that have been there and done it. The players believe in it, and they believe in you, and you've got those type guys that can do that. I definitely see, you know, Winnipeg in Hamilton in the final. I like to jinx anything as a player, but I just feel that those are the two best teams right now in the league.
So who are you cheering for, if that's the case?
Wow, come on, Hamilton's got to win it.
We won't tell Kyle and Oshie said that.
Don't worry, he'll probably text me. Him and Danny Mac are flying out on tomorrow night, so I'll let him know I said that, and he'll tell me tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, enjoy it. It's going down on Friday at Tim Hortons Field. The kickoff is at 7, but there's pregame festivities. You and the crew are going to be signing some autographs, and obviously during the game, you will be honored on the Wall of Honor. Congrats, man. Have a great time.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
So I'm going to try and throw something very random at Davis coming up on the podcast. But before that, fans, you got to know, Bel Air Direct is the official home and car insurance of the CFL. They've been a proud partner for 3 years now and offer exclusive and unique ways to take in CFL content and experiences. Check out tsn.ca/Bel Air Direct for access to football content, such as exclusive interviews with players and coaches and other fun stuff. Well, Bel Air Direct has some exciting news. They have launched their Coach for a Day contest that will give you a chance to win an all-inclusive VIP trip to the Grey Cup and see what it's like to be a CFL coach for a day. The winner will get a chance to see what it's like to be a CFL coach with an exclusive VIP trip for two to the Grey Cup. It includes two tickets to the game, accommodation, official gear, and more goodies. You also get to experience what it's like to be a coach in the CFL and be featured on the big screen during the 107th Grey Cup. Simple, right? Here's how to enter. Record a video of yourself giving a pep talk to your favorite CFL team and upload your video at coachforaday.ca. That is coachforaday.ca. Do it all before November 3rd for your chance to win. Thanks to our friends at Bel Air Direct, the official home and car insurance of the CFL. Something that I often do is I surprise you. I give you a little something random that I need you to weigh in on and set the record straight. I'm going to do that, but I'm also actually going to call in some help. I'm going to phone a friend.
Ooh-wee! This should be good.
So, Brody, because you've pinch hit on this podcast, as you know, I always give Young Davis something random to end, right? Yeah. Some objectionable conduct. And so we're phoning a friend. Weddings, marriages, and football.
Yes, I'm here
they
for
go
it.
Hand in hand. What I mean?
Yes.
We've got some nuptials coming up. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's weigh in on some wedding topics. So I don't know if you guys saw this happened in New Era Field, Buffalo. It's happened before at Tim Hortons Field. We had a mid-game nuptial, a little wedding ceremony at the football field. Do we like it? Do we not like it?
No.
Really?
They want it as a part of a contest, which I think is cool. And I think if you're really passionate, it's great. I personally couldn't do it, and I love football.
Would you
have done that? You had a wedding.
Yeah.
You're married.
Yeah, I am married. Yeah.
You wouldn't have done that.
And my wife definitely wouldn't
have
done that. No. I would say the same thing you say. I think it's really cool. And if I think it's a bride thing because the wedding is usually about the bride. They're more invested in the actual wedding part, unfortunately. But I would say that if your wife thinks it's cool and she wants to do it like this lady did, then and you're passionate about it, then great.
So they had, you know, player officiate Jim Kelly walked her down the aisle. I would love in Hamilton, next time you do this, feel free, the Waggle's giving you this, maybe Angelo Mosca officiates and like Pigskin Pete walks you down the aisle, okay. A little Oski Wee Wee.
Can you imagine?
I sure can.
Labor
Day next year.
Was this pitched to you by your wife?
Hell no. Because she would literally be the last person on earth
speaking of
to
weddings,
get married in a football stadium.
Your wedding. I wasn't there, but the pictures were dreamy.
Yeah, we had a good
It was like a downtown wedding. Do you remember this?
I wasn't invited.
You got to look. I wasn't. I just remember the pictures.
We had a good photographer.
Holy
Shout
smokes.
Out to Blair Gable.
Beautiful.
Okay, speaking of amazing scenes, beautiful weddings, I don't know if you guys saw this at a wedding. The bouquet toss, which I kind of feel like it's maybe like overdone. Like there's like this implied pressure that the single women at the wedding need to get married soon.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
Not doing it?
Not doing
okay,
it.
Okay, we wait. And
Jesse's looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm not doing it. I don't like it.
Is it because you don't trust your throwing ability?
No,
no receivers in your
throw.
Crew?
I've got a
you
great
kidding me?
Throw.
It's nothing to do with it.
The fact you said you have a great throw just tells you don't have a good throw.
I
because
do.
There's no such thing as
I
a great
do.
Throw.
I grew up throwing the football and the baseball with my brother.
So I can't. So break it down. You're not doing it because?
I just think it's overdone and I want to keep my bouquet.
Oh,
she's greedy.
It's really,
she's
it's greedy. All about you. You're
no,
selfish.
No, there's another personal reason but I don't want to share. I'll tell you
okay.
after.
Okay, all right. Glad all right. I don't think we did it.
A friend of hers blew out her ACL trying to grab a bouquet before.
Sorry. So you.
Yeah. I don't think. I'm pretty sure we did not do it either. Did you do it at your wedding?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, we had a pretty spectacular one in the United States. I don't know if you guys saw this online. The sister was like, "I am going to get that one-handed catch." This is like a Davis Sanchez interception.
Oh.
We'll retweet
That's
the link because this is obviously like. An audio medium.
Is that a you got mossed?
She basically mossed
the rest of the bridesmaids.
I'll find a still photo.
Have you guys seen? We're also not doing this, so nobody tweet me about this. But oh my gosh, the picture, guys! She's jumping so high, extended reach,
barefoot. You know
barefoot.
She's serious. Like she really, really, really wants to let everyone there know she's ready. She's available.
I mean, I hate it, but I love it. Also, what people will do is they'll do the garter toss and they'll wrap the garter belt around a football and then they'll toss the football.
Okay.
Which I'm also not
like
doing.
Like a CFL ball?
Oh, yes, could be.
Because our balls are bigger. At least they were at one point. I don't know if that's still factually correct.
I don't know if that's
still a fact, though. I like that. I didn't do the garter thing
no,
either.
No, I think it's cringy. I can't
That is
handle
very,
it.
Very weird.
You didn't wear a garter at your wedding?
No, I didn't.
What did you do for I got it. Would
I didn't. All right. And on that note, we'll end.
Yes.
Thank you, Brody,
we for love. Weighing in.
Thanks, guys. All the wedding prep. This should become a segment, I think.
No, it should not.
I'm sure all your listeners would love to help me plan my wedding.
We get enough wedding off camera, Brodes.